Good evening. My name is Luke. Let me add my welcome to the welcomes that you have already been given this evening. I hope you're enjoying the classic carols and the festive feel of things. There's something quite comforting about Christmas time, isn't there? Something quite comforting about the reassuring familiarity of things, particularly maybe at this time of that we're in at the moment. That's an even more appealing thing to us. I saw even on the news today, Mr. Javid not ruling out further coronavirus restrictions before Christmas Day. And in a time of such uncertainty, a time of upheaval, perhaps that reassuring familiarity of Christmas is even more appealing to us. The reassuring familiarity of singing the same carols, of hearing the same songs on the radio, watching the same old movies on TV, the same Christmas traditions that you might have year in, year out. It gives us a sense of security, a sense of stability. And I really hope that we will be able to enjoy some of those things over the next few days. The familiar stuff of Christmas brings comfort with it. I want to suggest today that the familiar story of Christmas also brings with it a great challenge. Christmas makes a huge claim. The claim of Christmas is that Jesus is the king. Not just that Jesus was a king way back when, but that Jesus is a king. And actually not just that he is a king, but that he is the king. The claim of Christmas is that Jesus is your king. I wonder how you feel about that. What's your knee-jerk reaction to the idea that Jesus has a claim on you and on your life? In this familiar Christmas story that Gloria has just read for us, in this familiar narrative, we come across three responses to the king. Which one best represents you? The first response that we see to the king is to be disturbed. The first couple of verses that Gloria read, they set the stage in this familiar nativity scene. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem. It's very familiar, isn't it? And they asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him." Now, we don't really know much about what this star was, what they saw in the sky. Was it a supernova? Possibly. People think perhaps it was a comet or just the alignment of certain planets. We don't know much either about the Magi, other than what we're told here. They appear to be some ancient Eastern philosophers or scholars, kind of scientists of their day. But what we do know is that they saw something in the sky which they took to be significant, an indication that a king had been born. And so they traveled to Jerusalem, the capital city. I mean, that makes sense, right? If something important like the birth of a king is going to happen, it's going to happen in London, not Luton. And so they head to the capital city to try and work out where this new king has been born. But instead, they run into the old king. When King Herod heard that there was a king knocking about, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Disturbed, that's the first reaction to King Jesus. That word disturbed is the same word used later on in the Bible about a pool of water that had been stirred up. Do you know the feeling inside when you've got a whirlpool going on? When you're in turmoil, in distress, perhaps you would say, all churned up on the inside. That's how Herod was feeling. He was disturbed. Why was he so distressed? Well, it's because King Herod was a very jealous king. Herod the Great was his name, but he had another name too. Do you know what it was? Herod the Vicious. By now, King Herod is towards the end of his life, and his latter years were marked by a vicious and violent paranoia. He was always scared that someone was going to come and take his place, to the extent where he actually killed his own wife, one of his wives. And he killed at least two of his own sons and hundreds of other rivals as well. Herod really didn't like the idea that someone might take my place as king. No wonder Jerusalem was disturbed with him. They knew what Herod was like. They knew what he was capable of. They knew what kind of reprisals might happen when they came across this news. And in fact, their worst fears were actually turned out to be true. We see in verse 16 of chapter 2 what Herod's plan was. When he realized that he'd been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and right in character, he gives orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem who were under 2 years old. Vicious, violent. Herod was disturbed. When he comes across this king, he is disturbed and he wants to get rid of this king. He hates this king. And you know, that's often actually how people respond to Jesus. It might seem a bit extreme. You think, I would never respond like that to Jesus. But actually, this isn't the only time this happened. If you were to read the Matthew's Gospel that you've got there on your chairs, this is a part of the Bible. It's Matthew's account of Jesus' life, his death, his resurrection, and what that means for us. If you were to read this, you would see that throughout Jesus' life, he is hated and plotted against. People really don't like his claim to be your king. In fact, this very same title, King of the Jews, hung over Jesus, not simply at his birth, but also at his death, on that sign above his head as Jesus hung and died on the cross in the place of his enemies, in the place of those who hate him and want him dead, so that they could be forgiven simply by trusting in him. Many people hate Jesus and they want to kill Jesus. That's the first response that we see here to the king. They are disturbed. They are churned up on the inside and they want to get rid of him. I wonder if that's the same for you, whether you feel disturbed. Of course, we're not a king, not in the same way that Herod was. But each of us actually likes to be the king of our own life, right? Each of us wants to be the one making decisions about what I can do, what I can't do, what I should do, what I shouldn't do, what's good for me. Each of us wants to be in control about what we do and what we don't do. And the idea that Jesus might have a claim on the way that I use my money, my passions, my body, my stuff, the idea that Jesus wants to have the final say on those kind of things, frankly, that's quite disturbing. It's quite distressing. Maybe, like Herod, you really don't like the idea of Jesus taking my place as king of my life. And so maybe, like Herod, you see that as kind of a threat. And you wouldn't kill Jesus, but you kind of want to get rid of him. You want to forget about him. You hate him. But here's the thing. You can't kill the king. Herod tried. He failed. Jesus had already escaped. And even the ones that managed to put him to death on a cross, even they couldn't keep a good man down. And on the third day, Jesus rose from the dead. He went up into heaven. He sits on a throne. And today, he makes the claim that he is your king. I wonder if you find that disturbing. But even hating Jesus and rejecting Jesus doesn't actually invalidate his claim on your life. The Bible says that one day every knee will bow in front of King Jesus. And by then, for some, it will be too late. The difference with Jesus is that he is a good king. Unlike Herod, Jesus is a good and a gentle and a kind king. And we don't serve him in terror and in fear, but in love. He is a good king, and it's a privilege to be one of his people. That's the claim of Christmas, that Jesus is your king. Some people are disturbed by that idea. Others are simply disinterested Herod is plotting this murderous plan. And so he calls a cobra meeting. He gathers all the experts in, and he wants to know where this king is going to be born. We see that in verse 4. He called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law. He asked them where the Messiah was to be born. And they know the answer because they've been studying the ancient writings. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has written. You, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least, for out of you will come a ruler, one who will shepherd my people Israel. They say, look, it's going to come from Bethlehem. It's there in the text. We know very well where this king is going to come from. And so Herod sends out the Magi on a reconnaissance mission. Come and tell me what you find. But here's the really weird thing. I don't know if you've noticed this before. The really strange thing is that the religious experts don't go with them. And that's really strange because these guys, these religious experts, they should be the ones most interested in the coming of Messiah. It was their job, their only job, to study the scriptures and to teach it to others. They would know better than almost anyone all of these wonderful promises that are there in the first part of the Bible about this Messiah figure, this hero who is going to come and put everything wrong right, this king who would come and establish a glorious kingdom. In fact, all of the people had been waiting and hoping for Messiah to come for hundreds of years. And now here on your doorstep are a bunch of guys who are saying, do you know what? I've got pretty good evidence to think that he is finally here. I think he might actually be here. And the better news is he's only less than 10 kilometers down the road from here. And yet despite all of that, they don't even bother to go with them and check it out. It's crazy. Imagine if, maybe your favorite celebrity or someone that you would really like to meet. Throw out a name of the person that you'd most like to meet in the whole world, a celebrity. Yes, Jemima. Meghan Trainor. You could have picked anyone in the whole world and you picked Meghan Trainor. You would like to meet Meghan Trainor more than anyone else? Anyone else? Who would you like to meet most? Throw out a name. Someone from over there. Kayla, go on then.
Son.
Huh?
Son.
Hyungmin Son.
Son.
The Tottenham player. I'm not sure about... Okay, just imagine that it's someone that you actually want to meet rather than those two people. Okay, let's go with Meghan Trainor. Imagine that you really want to meet Meghan Trainor for some reason, okay? And imagine that you heard a rumour that Meghan Trainor was actually in the local area. In fact, Meghan Trainor is doing a Christmas giveaway, a Christmas meet and greet. And do you know where it is? It's at the Millfield Theatre, just down the road from here. If you heard that, you might think, not very likely. I don't think that's actually true. But at the very least, you'd go and check it out, right? Probably not if it was Meghan Trainor. But if it was someone that you actually wanted to meet, no offense, Meghan, if you're watching online. If it's someone that you really wanted to meet, of course you would. It's only 2 minutes down the road. It's not going to take much effort to go and check it out. And you might just find something incredible. But these guys, they're told that Messiah is just down the road, literally less than 10 kilometers from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. And yet they don't even bother to go and check it out. Perhaps they'd been disappointed before. Maybe there had been false alarms and they got really excited and they chased a lead and it turned out to be nothing. Maybe that's you. Maybe that's where you're at today. Perhaps you've had experience of religion in the past and you've come to the conclusion that it's not for me. Or maybe you've looked for hope in all sorts of different places and it's never panned out. It's always been a bit of a disappointment. And so you think it's probably just going to be the same. Maybe like the religious experts, you are familiar with the facts, but it hasn't ever really meant anything for you. And maybe when you come across keen beans like the Magi, who actually seem to believe that it's really true, you think, well, you know, nice story, and it's nice for them, but there's probably nothing in it. It's probably not true. But what if it is? What if it actually is true that Jesus is God, and that he came to this world as a baby, as a human, that he lived a perfect life, that he died on the cross in the place of sinners, that he rose again from the dead, all so that we could receive life with God that starts now and goes on forever and ever and ever. Not because of anything that we have done, not because of anything that we contribute, but simply by receiving it as a free gift. That seems too good to be true, right? But what if it actually is true? Don't make the same mistake that the religious experts made. I'm not asking you to take my word for it. I'm just saying you need to check this out for yourself. And just like those religious experts who were actually really close to finding out whether it was true for themselves, it doesn't take much effort, especially if you are here today or if you are watching online. I want to say you're actually quite close to the end of your journey. You're quite close. It's not going to take much effort. You're not going to have to go far to find out for yourself whether it really is true or not. Here are a couple of ways that you could do that. The first is very simply to take this home. This is Matthew's Gospel. It's a part of the Bible exactly as it is in this Bible. It's just one section of it. This is Matthew's account of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. If you are online, get in touch and I'll send you one, or you can find it for free online very easily. Why not read this for yourself and ask God to reveal whether it's true to you? Here's another way that you could explore whether there is any truth in the Christmas story or not. In the new year, we are going to be running something called Hope Explored. Hope Explored is 3 one-hour sessions in a small group of people who are asking similar questions to you. And the idea is it's a forum for you to ask the questions that you have and to explore whether there really is hope to be found in Jesus. It's very low key. It's completely free. We can do it online or in person, depending on what works best for you. If you're interested in that, please do talk to me afterwards. Or if you're online, there is a link in the description of the video where you can register your interest. And there's also, you'll see in the link in the description of the video, there's a link to a teaser trailer about what Hope Explored is all about. Don't make the same mistake as the religious leaders did. You might not think it's very likely, but what if it is true? At least make the small amount of effort that it takes to check it out for yourself. Some people, when they hear about the king, they're disturbed. Others are just disinterested. But there's another group of people who are delighted. In this familiar Christmas story, the Magi serve as a model of how to respond to the king. I've told some of you before, I've been listening to The Hobbit recently. And the guys who are regular here at Silver Street have had to put up with all sorts of illustrations from The Hobbit. But I make no apology because it's a brilliant story. It's a story about this group of friends and companions who are on a long journey to recover some of their gold that is being guarded by a dragon. And their journey is long and it is treacherous. They find themselves in all sorts of scrapes at every turn. They go through mountains, they go through caves, they go through enchanted forests. They're always in danger, often captured and in danger of losing their life. And at various stages, you could well forgive them for giving up and going home. But they don't. They keep going, and they keep going, and they keep going because treasure awaits them, and they know that it's going to be worth it. Well, in a similar way, these Magi, they make their own epic journey. They haven't just come from down the road. They've come from far in the east. And they've heard of this king who's been born or who's about to be born. And so they search him out with great intent. And when they finally reach him, they are delighted. We see that in the next verses. After they had heard the king, they went on their way. The star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. They were delighted. They had finally found the one that they had been searching for so long. And so they respond how you should respond to a king. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and they worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. This week, Lewis Hamilton was knighted for his services to motorsport, and so he knelt before Prince Charles as he received his knighthood. He was in that position of honour and respect and deference. To kneel down before royalty is to say, I am at your service. And so we see that here with the Magi. They are on their faces in front of a newborn baby because they know that this baby is actually the king. They give of themselves and they give of their stuff. It's different from the Hobbit, isn't it? At the end of the Hobbit, they want to get treasure. At the end of this journey, they give him their treasure. They give him of themselves. They give of their stuff because they realize that this baby, this child, is the king. And this isn't the only time that people find themselves flat on their faces in the presence of the glorious Jesus. Again, if you were to read this Matthew's Gospel, you would see there are several occasions when people find themselves flat on their faces worshipping Jesus. Like the time that Jesus walked on the water to his disciples in the boat. And as he got into the boat, the wind calmed down and his disciples fall on their knees and they worship him not just as a king, but they say, surely you are the Son of God. Or when Jesus rose from the dead, he revealed himself first to some of the women who had followed him. And again, they clasp his feet, they worship before him, and they worship him again, not just as a king, but as God himself. Who knows how much the Magi knew about who Jesus was and what he would do? But they knew enough to worship. And so do you. Maybe you still have questions. Questions are good, please ask them. But maybe some of us here this evening have seen enough to know that Jesus is the King. Maybe even this experience, this encounter with Jesus has left you delighted. And if that's the case, then I want you to know that you can become one of his people simply by doing what the Magi did, by coming to him in your hearts, by worshipping him, by giving your life to serve him. Give of yourself, give of your stuff to King Jesus and say, now you're my king. I'm not afraid like Herod to say, Jesus is the king of my life. And if you do that, you can become one of his people. That's something that you can do by yourself. If you're not sure what to do or how to do that, then just talk to the person who invited you today or have a chat to me afterwards. And even if you're not at that stage this evening, I do want to call all of us to respond to the challenging claim of Christmas. Amongst the reassuring familiarity, amongst the comforts that Christmas brings, don't let this claim get lost. Jesus claims that he is your king. So how will you respond to that? I'm going to finish by leading us in prayer. We're going to talk to the king that we have been talking about. So let me lead us in prayer. Lord Jesus Christ, born a baby and yet a king, born in poverty and yet the one in whom are found all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge, receive both our lives and our gifts. And as you led men of old to worship you, lead us all